This is the Talking Split Podcast.
Welcome, coaches, to the Talking Split Podcast. Again, very unusual, Diggs. We're on a Wednesday as we record this one. Still noise out the back. SBC getting closer to being completed. I'm Rob Calder, joined once again by the country crew. You guys have almost got your own like tag that you could graffiti over the walls as you walk out of here. Nathan Cooper-Brown, Zoe Carr, welcome.
Thank you for having us. I believe they call us the Dream Team. No? Okay, moving on.
Yeah. I don't have the cricket sound effect, I'm afraid. But it would...
We're off to a great start.
It's going well. We're okay. Like, very good reviews after your last two podcasts about mistakes we've made. Like, it's interesting how many people we've walked past that have just said, hey, good episodes, I've done all of them. Like, it happens a lot, and hopefully it does actually end in a little bit of self-reflection for a lot of coaches out there. It's like, yeah, we're not perfect. You're going to make mistakes, which is fine. Just find ways to acknowledge it and just move forward.
We had a lot of interaction on social media as well through Talking Split, X and Instagram. And one of the messages that I just loved the most was, I'm currently doing this and didn't realise it was a mistake. And so are able to make the change now before it, you know, costs them in some way. So that's awesome, and that's awesome feedback. So we really appreciate everybody reaching out and letting us know their stories as well.
Absolutely. I mean, Coops, you got a message the other day, support as well, with someone else that also watches Below Deck.
I did. The really important thing that came out of that pod. So shout out to Walt, who's looking after me, making feel like I'm not alone. So yeah, Below Deck crew is growing.
What a community it is, this coaching one. It opens doors everywhere.
That's it.
Some of them below the surface of the water.
Hey, look, once again,
like, we do sort of joke about it a little bit, but obviously we do appreciate all the interaction on socials. There are people out there that like the post on Facebook near on every week, which we do appreciate out there. Some shares wouldn't go astray, but, you know, we'll take the likes as well. But it is fantastic to have so many coaches reach out on various things, and I think really that's what this is designed to do, is just have more conversations with coaches. Like, it flesh out your coaching network a little bit more, talk to more people in that coaching space, and hopefully try and problem solve a few of the things out there. And look, you know, if you grow the pod to be like a multi-billion dollar business, we wouldn't be objecting to it. But, you know, every like, share and retweet goes away.
Multi-billion?
Billion. Oh, start high.
Wowza.
Yeah, yeah. We can shark tank this thing.
Seems apt.
Yeah. An app, you say. An app. No, we'll see how we go with it. But it is one of those things. Once again, reminder, this will be my last reminder I'll be sending out. If you are interested in a coach's study tour, now is the time to send me that email. We're going to try and get everything together sort of by the end of the year, where we can work out exactly how many coaches it would be, how much does it cost, where we'd be going, those types of things. So this is your last chance to get something into us before then. Book club, reminder, once again. Zoe, how many pages have you read since we last spoke about this?
I'm no further ahead. I've been busy. I had a Def Leppard concert last night, so really ate into my my reading time. But I'll get there. I will get there.
Yeah, absolutely. Jenna and Bestie have also promised they'll be reading books in the interim. So, coaches, if you are out there, if there's a book you are reading, if you want to send through some notes, we're happy to throw that as a little bit of a stamp of approval.
Oprah's Book Club.
No, Joan Calamezzo. You know this.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. Parks and Rec. Come on, man. So, once again, if you have got anything out there, you are more than welcome to send that in, and we'll read it out. We did get one on X the other day, Phil Jackson's 11 Rings. You read that one, Cook?
I have, actually. It was – you had to kind of pick through it a little bit. I don't think it's for everybody, and it doesn't – it definitely doesn't read the way that the title and the cover kind of explain. It's definitely a little bit more – Phil Jackson orientated, and it's a little bit more kind of story driven. So it's less kind of coach manual. It's more about, if you're interested in him as a person and how, like, his coaching journey and so on works. So yeah, it was decent, but not as much of a kind of coach help book that people may confuse it for.
Yeah, absolutely. I haven't read it on that one. I have read a couple of his other ones, but it was when I used to work in the city and I had to sit on the train for like hours on end and, you know, just sort of scroll through them. But I haven't read that one, so it might be one I'll have a little bit of a look at some stage as well. Timeouts. We're jumping into this one feet first. Timeouts are a vital part of what we do. We had to call a timeout on ourselves about 4:40 ago as we just started to go off on numerous tangents. And really, timeouts are all about interventions and what sort of an impact can we have in game type settings. They're one of, what, how many timeouts do you get a game? Usually about 5-ish, depending on the level you're coaching at in the competition. If you're coaching college basketball, you may get 25, depending on if the game's being broadcast or anything along those lines too. But timeouts are one of the few opportunities we have to directly impact a game. Obviously, the quarter time, half time breaks are in there as well. But this is one that's controlled by us. You know, there have been times where things might be going fantastically, and all of a sudden, quarter time goes, and it's like, oh, that was our momentum gone, or those types. It's not always the easiest thing to just find your spot in games and when to use them, how to use them, why you use them, what do they look like, what's the setup look like, those types of things. Are you a user of timeouts, Coops, or do you like to sort of bank them for the back end of the game? What, where are you at with it?
Big time banker. Yeah, as I progress.
Suspenders out.
Yeah.
Like, I just imagine his thumbs.
Rocking back and forward on his heels into his forefoot.
As I've gone in my journey, I really like the timeout to stop the run. It's the thing that I really value it for the most, like that I can stop the momentum of the other team. I can put a dent in what they're trying to do, steady my own ship and so on. So, yeah, I've rarely called a timeout just to change things up. You know, I'm a believer that you can do that from the sidelines or do it through a leader. Rarely call a timeout to positively reinforce. I've had that in the back of my mind probably in the last few years of trying to maybe do that a little bit more, especially if I was coaching a younger team, within the kind of etiquette and ethics of the game, you know, not up 50 and do it that way. So banking them for sure, using them for special situations, like especially end of first half, or most importantly, like I really like to have at least two in the bank going into the last, 3 minutes of the game. Like I feel way more confident as a coach that I can manage what we call crunch time, with at least two timeouts.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. What about you, Zoe? How do you manage yours?
I'd love to say I have a script, but I don't. I
much like a certain podcast we're all familiar with.
No, I'm like Coops, I'd love to have at least two going into those last couple of minutes. But if I need to use them, I'll use them. I'm a really big believer of try and stem the bleeding before you bleed out. And I think sometimes people or coaches have an idea of I've got to bank my timeouts, but by then it's too late. I'll give you an example. Let's say you're in the first half and the first quarter, team comes out and just blows you out of the water, you call a timeout. And then you make an adjustment, you do all that, you go back on and they continue to blow you out or there's been no improvement from what you're doing. And you go, well, I need to keep my other timeout for the next quarter or so. Oh, I'm a big believer of if you need it, use it. And sometimes, particularly in the third quarter, that's where I think some coaches start to really struggle with that belief because – a lot of coaches would like to hold on and not call a timeout in the third. I know a lot that have that sort of theory of I'm not calling a timeout in the third ever. And I know I coached against some coaches that have that theory and I loved coaching against them because we'd come out of timeout and so I knew to change my defense into full pressure mode, try and strangle them as best as I could and either – force them to call a timeout that they don't want to, which gets under their skin and gets them thinking about us rather than them. Or they stick true to what they want to do and not call the timeout, which means I can snag momentum for an entire quarter. So, yeah, like I'd love to have a script, but I really don't. I think one of the things that's really important about calling timeouts, though, is – sometimes if a team goes on a bit of a run, and again, it's when people have this, if we go 6 unanswered points, I'm calling a timeout. Some people have that, again, that sort of a theory or rule that they go by, and I'm not saying it's wrong. It just doesn't work for me. One of the things for me that makes me say I need to call a timeout, are we getting good looks and they're just not going in? Are we defending the way we've spoken about in our game plan and, that we know is going to work and they've just made all world shots. And in that case, I don't think we need a timeout. a timeout that's in, that's just going to be wasteful because we're actually doing what we need to do. We've just got to find ways to, one, put the ball through the rim, and two, continue to force them to shoot those sort of shots. So it's, yeah, it's about trying to read all those things in the moment. And I'm not saying I've got it right every time. Definitely haven't. It's probably one for the pod the last 2 weeks. But I think as you go on, it's something that you become more comfortable with and you get more of a read and an easier read of your team and what they need and what they don't.
It's interesting you spoke about it, Coops. Very rarely do you call a timeout from a position of positivity. Do you think that's a little bit of a blight on how we coach a little bit at times? Like we don't always celebrate something that's gone well. Like we tend to call the timeout when things have gone wrong.
100%. You know, our reptilian brain is built to learn through the negative, you know what I mean? And we naturally fall into that as coaches, that we're always trying to fix things. You know, it's okay, we're looking for the mistake, we're looking for the error, how do we fix it? So we're naturally doing that, and that's usually where a timeout comes from. Okay, we've got problems, I need to fix it, rather than, you know, being able to identify, hey, look, you know, 4 or 5 out of the last possessions, we've actually done exactly what we spoke about throughout the week. Perhaps we've executed it to the point of scoring or getting a stop, or maybe we haven't, but it's still been a good process based on the situation, especially, you know, maybe midway through the second quarter. Can I get a timeout and get the guys or girls sitting down and just go through it and say, hey guys, fantastic. This is what we spoke about. We're doing it. Let's make sure we stay on top of it and keep building. And I think, especially, I mean, domestic coaches 100% should be doing that at least 50% of the time. And then I would say VJBL coaches, if they could be doing that maybe 25% of the time, I think now we're hitting on something to really try and change the way that we look at the game, we celebrate the game, and we coach through more positive reinforcement.
As soon as you said reptilian brain, I thought, I am the lizard queen. Like straight off the top, like a queen. Simpsons, come on.
Yeah, Duff Gardens.
Yeah, there you go. It's a great episode. Don't look at me like that. But it's a valid point, though, because I think you bang on the money, because a lot of the times we sort of feel like timeouts can only be used to fix stuff, and it's not a case of fixing things. Like, we've all been in situations where we've potentially been up in games, called the timeout, it's like, hey, just run this new play that you've never seen before and have a crack at this, because this is the opportunity that I don't necessarily get at training. Like, I've got everyone here, I've got a team that I can play against, and you start to get a little bit creative with your timeouts. There's a time and a place for that sort of stuff too, as long as you're not doing it in an arrogant way and trying to, you know, be down on anyone. It's quite okay.
I think the biggest caveat to this is what does your week look like? You know, what sort of, you know, how does training look like for you in that, you know, are you a big intervention coach? You know, do your players really rely on you stopping the action maybe more often to handhold or to give more instruction and you know, help them execute? When it comes to game time, that's what they're going to need, because that's how you've prepared them. But if you don't call as many timeouts and you like, you know, more of a flow and trust the players, well, then practice should look like that. So when these guys and girls get into a game, they should be prepared to be able to play the way that you've practiced. And I don't think it necessarily marries up with a lot of coaches.
Yep. I'm not a big timeout person. Like, I tend to not call them unless I drastically have to and the sky is falling. I am a big work your way through it type of coach. But it's also how I take my training sessions. It's like, I'm not going to give you all the answers here. I'm going to put you on a little bit of a path, and we're going to see what you see, and how you create, and what you do in that space is kind of up to you. So the hope being that because they've been there previously at a training session, by the time they hit a game, they're okay. They've seen that before. They've had to sort of sink or swim as to what it's going to look like for them. So I think there's an element too of it's got to stick with your personality and your coaching style in that space. How do you, like, what's, I'll get to you on this one first though. What is the structure of your timeout? What do you want your players doing? What do you want your team manager doing? What do you want your assistant coaches doing? How would you structure what it's supposed to look like as the timeout gets called?
Yeah. So if I know I'm going to call a timeout, I tell my assistant coach. Sometimes that can't happen. Sometimes, you know, some things happen and you got to call a timeout really quickly and your assistant coach doesn't know. But I'll tell my assistant coach, giving them a beat to come up with, and it's a strategy I have, doesn't work for everybody, but I have a lead assistant coach and that assistant coach is responsible for messaging to me throughout the game. So if I have a development coach there or a second assistant and they have something to say, it goes through the lead assistant coach. And it's a weakness of mine. I can't take it's like a lot of voices going at me while I'm in the throes of it, and I need somebody I can trust, which is generally you, Rob. Somebody
fools.
I can
fools, I tell you.
I can trust though, but that can, because of your experience and what you're very good at, is being able to break it down into those sound bites. So the timeout comes, the athletes sit down, team manager gives them their drinks, they take a breath. While that's happening, the assistant coach hands me their whiteboard. They've got 5, maybe 10 seconds to get their point across as to what needs to be hit on in that timeout. And then I'll go into the timeout. If it is something I'm going to have to draw something up, my first cue is eyes here and point at the board. So then it's that just to refocus them in, because we've given them that 5, 10 seconds to just detach a little bit, and so to bring them back in. But I will talk about no more than 3 points in that. Now, I found that really hard in the beginning because I had all these points I wanted to get across and all these things, again, I wanted to fix. But I need to pick the most important three, and I need to hit on those and then try and work the other points once the athletes have gone back onto the floor, use the assistant coaches to try and work the other points through the bench for when they check in. Just to keep that, I guess, their ability to absorb information and be able to implement it. I think sometimes we pepper too much and give too much information. And again, sometimes they're just trying to survive, like they're absolutely cooked. Like, and so they're just trying to breathe, they're trying to take a drink, and then we're throwing information at them at a rate of knots in the space of, you know, and it's not 1 minute, it ends up being maybe 30 seconds. So 3 points, that's it. They're back out onto the floor. And if there's more that I wanted to work on, then that instruction goes to the assistant coach, and it's their job while the game's in play and I'm working through with the players on the court to make sure that the players on the on the bench are aware of that for when it's eventually them.
Yep. What about you, Coops? What's the process?
Yeah, the nature of the way I call timeouts, I don't usually have the chance to tell the assistant that it's coming. And the fact that, you know, it's usually me getting ticked off and just yelling at the bench and calling it. But yeah, you know, I put together a bit of a game day protocol, which includes a timeout protocol that goes to the coaches, it goes to the athletes. So we talk about, so I'll call the timeout, assistant coaches will come to me. I have a offensive coordinator, defensive coordinator, and they get to give me 1 point from their side of the ball. And it can only be one, so they've got to refine whatever they have down to 1 point. So each gets a chance to give me one thing. Then I'll head into the huddle. I've tried some different things in the past. Sometimes I've had the players that aren't on the bench actually stand behind, so we've got all eyes on the board. I keep moving that around kind of depending on the group and what the bench looks like. You know, there's some different things there to consider. I have the guy sitting down. I have the point guard in the middle, so I'm talking to the point guard directly. I'm similar, so I'll try and refine it to 3 points as well, similar to Zoe. So I never want to go more than three. So I'll try and address the major concern first, then hit them with the next two possessions, usually finishing on what the next possession is. So if we're coming back out on offense, draw something up, coming out on defense, maybe change the defense for one possession. And then something I've tried to be much better at in the last 3 or 4 years is getting to a point where I'm repeating the 3 points, maybe again, like in a smaller version. So just coming back to it, we're doing, you know, hey, remember, okay, we're doing A, B, and C. If I've got a little bit longer in the timeout, I might even use some question asking to that. What are we doing here? What are we doing here? What are we doing here? And then the coaches and the athletes know that it's one voice. So again, not to sound egotistical, it's to make sure that the information is, you know, getting to where it needs to go and there's no confusion. So it has to just be my voice. So there's one voice. And then coming into the timeout and out of the timeout, the athletes and coaches are only allowed to use positive effort-based reinforcement language. So, hey, great job, you know, good box out, you know, those sorts of things. No system communication. So can't muddy the waters in that respect. When we come out of the timeout, there's the point guard is allowed to reaffirm what was said. So they can be the next voice to come back to system talk or basically the timeout talk, you know, if they had time or whatever to bring the guys back in. Hey, remember, we're doing A, B, and C. And then preferably what I like to have is have an assistant record what was said in the timeout so we have a little bit of a record that we can go back to later on. That I don't always remember. I'd like to be better in that, but that is part of the protocol.
Yep. Well, I think that's one of the things that for coaches out there that are wanting to go through the pathway and you know, potentially get on state benches or either junior or senior Australian team benches, you will always, or more often than not, have to be an elite assistant coach first. And that's one of the things I found with you, Rob, as an elite, you are an elite assistant coach because I knew when every timeout was coming. So we only spoke about when we call the timeout, and sometimes timeouts can come out of nowhere and you don't know, you know, sometimes you can read, you can get a feel, but it was any time they'd gone to the bench and called it, you would echo that to me. So I knew a timeout was coming so I could start prepping what I was going to say. Even if they hadn't called it, you'd be saying, hey, we score here, they're going to call it. Yeah, and 9 times out of 10, that would happen. So again, it just was able to get that mind shift ready to be able to, okay, especially if it was sort of in an emotional part of the game, you know, and so you might be up and about or whatever, you can start to just calm yourself down. I've spoken about it on the pod before about being the face they need to see in a timeout. Like, it's got to be clear, it's got to be calm. And that sort of information from an assistant coach is elite. And one of the points you touched on, Coops, it's really important. I really can't stand seeing it, is when a timeout happens and then players are going back onto the court and assistant coaches are going to players to say more things. If they come to you, that's one thing, because they may be coming to you to say, you know, I didn't quite catch this, or so does that mean we're in this defense or something like that. You can answer those questions. That's not a problem, because that's reaffirming the message. Make sure you know the message, though. Like, if you're stuffing around behind the head coach talking rubbish or joking around or just not listening, don't answer that question. Send them to the head coach, but then also expect a conversation at the end of the game. But it's if they come to you with those sort of things, absolutely. But do not go and, like you said, muddy the waters on a coach's message afterwards because you've got something to say. Because at the end of the day, and I think you've said it before on the pod, Rob, assistant coach world is the best world to live in. And, yep, sometimes the hard part of that, though, is that you've got thoughts or you've got theories and you want to get them across. The head coach may not have addressed that. That's not your problem. You've got to stick true to the messaging of the head coach.
Assistant coach or under 12s, they're the two.
Yeah.
Like the best ones by far. We'll do a pod in the future about like best stories of coaching, which could go forever. And yeah. I think all of mine are under 12 related. But there was
I have a question for both of you. Do either of you ever call timeouts for a break for athletes?
For fatigue?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I've done that before.
I had once. 6 players.
Oh,
yeah. I also got a very strategic tech in that game just because one of them had fouled out. And it's like, I can see momentum coming at this point. And it's like, look, maybe I need to give my direction a little bit closer to the elbow
as opposed to
the sidelines. I wouldn't do it. Like, you know, hand on heart, I assure you I did not say anything to the ref on the way through. They're just like, hey, coach, get off the court. I'm not on the court. I'm on the court. Like, it was one of those ones where it's like they just needed a break. I had no timeouts left and I had no subs left. And I think we were holding on to like a 4-point lead. So I didn't have a choice.
Mm.
I'll say that so I can sleep at night.
Yeah.
Well, I think the reason I ask is it's one of those things. It's okay to have a guide in mind of how you want to use your timeouts. And it's also similarly with, you know, end of game, end of clock situations. You can have like a bit of a guide for what you want, but at the end of the day, sometimes you've got to make calls in the moment and you've got to be strong enough to veer off that guide, I guess. And it's I would never have thought I would call timeouts just for fatigue. But, you know, when you're coaching NBL1 and, you know, wins and losses matter and all that sort of stuff, you need to keep particular players on the floor. You know, things aren't going great for you, or maybe you're playing out of your skin and you know, if you're the underdog and you know, hey, we're a chance of actually
snagging this
win. Yeah. We've got to keep this five on, you know. That's where you probably have to veer off the guide and say, hey, I'm just going to blow a timeout here. Give one up just to help with that fatigue. Give them a minute's rest so then hopefully we can make it through to the end of the game.
Well, going the other way, there have been times I've needed a timeout and not called it because you look down the other end and it's like, one, I don't want to give their best players a chance to get a little bit of a blow, but two, I don't want a stoppage in this game. Well, I need this to get up and down for the same fatigue reason. It's like, geez. If we can just string a couple together here, maybe I can avoid having to call it in that position too.
That is so true. And that is – I've been in that situation in a game as an assistant coach. We were playing in a Siebel, so it was a long time ago, in a Siebel conference final. So we were incredibly depleted. I think we had maybe four of our original team and the rest were sort of just ring-ins or up from youth league. And we were playing Dandenong at that stage, who were still linked to WNBL. So they had all those WNBL players still playing and somehow we were winning. And it was just amazing. But then they started to sort of bring it back in the start of the fourth quarter. And then as we got towards the end of the fourth, and we're hitting that sort of 3-minute mark. We still had our three timeouts. And the question came, should we call our timeout? And there was, I guess, a bit of back and forward. There was...
Because at that stage you can use it or lose it.
Correct.
Like if you got three with that long to go, then if you don't call it, you lose it straight away.
Now we called it and it lost us the game because it gave those WNBL players... like highly experienced, you know, all that sort of stuff, gave them another hit with their head coach, gave them, like you said, that extra minute of break, and it just gave them that chance to get it together. We needed the game to end. Like time wasn't our friend. We needed to just keep the score or the time ticking down. We didn't need to prolong the game, and that was a really good lesson. I that still sits with me. Whenever I'm coaching the underdogs and we happen to be doing well, it's just let the game end. Like if I finish the game not having called a timeout and we win, I'm fine with that.
Yeah, you don't get to take credit for it though. That's when it's on the players. If you ever call a timeout, it's all them. But
yeah.
I mean, Coops, you hit on something before though about where you structure your players in particular that timeout. I've never done the whole stand behind the bench if you're on the bench at that stage. Like I'm a big believer, obviously, of the five that are on there and the five that sit. Mm. Absolutely on board with that. I've always viewed the area behind the bench as the team manager's area. So I've always wanted to try and keep players away from that so they don't intervene and that type of thing. No issue with it either way. Like if that works for you, that works for you. The other reason I've always wanted players behind me is so that the players that are on the bench don't get distracted with what's going on over my shoulder.
Yeah.
Like, and it's, you know, when you coach the young kids in particular, a cricket ends up in the gym somehow and they're like...
I suppose it's a bit different between what you're talking
world.
About coaching and what Coops is coaching
world.
In FIBA,
for sure.
Basketball as well.
I would hope those kids are dialed into what you're saying on that.
Well, yeah. And they've also got the space to put them behind the bench, whereas you probably don't.
The old Diamond Valley Court one?
Yeah.
There wasn't much going on there.
Well, we actually, with the Crocs this time around, we didn't do that. I kind of trusted the guys behind me to stay engaged. The last time I did it was with our group in Mackay, so under 20 Navy group, and a very inexperienced group of young athletes who you could just tell had attention issues. And so the idea of getting them back there and being able to monitor their eyes and their engagement was just something that, you know, that we had to be on. The funny part in Asia was managing the length of timeouts, which we were discussing earlier about this crazy thing that you had to have all your athletes back out on the floor with 10 seconds left on the clock.
So everyone could stand there and
stand around and just look at each other and just kind of shrug. But, you know, we had the advertisement board and that was kind of close to the bench. And so the first time out of the tournament, you know, kind of Ash gave me something, Luke gave me something, had my board, was trying to navigate around the players, finally got down on, you know, on one knee, put the pen to board and then was getting the tap of like, all right, they got to come back in. I was like, what the hell? Like, what just happened? Like, where is this? So, you know, we had to create a new kind of timeout protocol policy that as soon as the timeout was called, you know, the guys that weren't either checking into the game or on the game, they had to like slam up against the advertisement board and make themselves like skinny and, you know, like they were in a jailbreak just so the guys could get in, sit down. I had room to get in, sit down because, you know, that 4 or 5 seconds was crucial. So I think, you know, especially the higher you go, there's some little things there you really do have to consider in timeout management.
Well, it is all about captivating their attention too. Mm. So you have that problem. I mean, you've obviously said you like the point guard in front of you, but you really want to make eye contact with everyone in that timeout at various stages just to make sure they're still locked in. I was reading something the other day. It was along the lines of the easiest way to make people feel uncomfortable is look them in the eyes, because the vast majority of people like see someone look at them and just look away automatically as I turn my head away from the microphone. So good job, Rob. But it's one of those areas too where you want that eye contact between the two because you're trying to give them information. Are their eyes on the board and the coach's board stuff like you hit on it before, Zoe, like eyes here, is a great way, especially when you're coaching the young athletes in particular. They need to have someone grab their attention because they don't have a huge attention span. The whiteboard is a great safe space where, and for some players, to be completely fair, they can be uncomfortable when you eyeball them and say, this is what I need from you and this is how I need it. Whereas the whiteboard's a really nice safe space. It's like, hey, eyes on the board, hear what I'm saying here, and they can still look down, they can take it all in, because there's always noise, there's always, you know, parents or other courts running and those types of things too. So it is an easier way, I find, of just making sure they're kind of tuned in, I think. But, yeah, haven't had huge success by the same token with a lot of things coming out of timeouts either.
Well, it's funny, I thinking about that, and again, you know, it probably goes back to the level that I've coached most recently, but two things that I've done now a few times coming from some people that I – well, one that I admire in Popovich, who – on multiple occasions just doesn't go into the huddle, you know, basically sends that message of, you know, either maybe frustration or disappointment or, hey, you guys need to lift here. We need more of an athlete voice. And yeah, I've done that in a number of levels, NBL one, state teams, where it's like, okay, nah, like you guys need to find something here, either, you know, some peer-to-peer coaching or just understand that, you know, the message that I'm giving you isn't getting through. Hey, you know, like wake up. And then the other one, you know, from one of my biggest mentors and heroes in coaching in Brian Gorgian, and then, you know, watching him his last year with Illawarra when you still had access to the timeout. And he came in and he sat on the chair and he had his whiteboard on his lap and he just sat there and just eyeballed all five guys up and down. I swear to God, for 40 seconds, did not say a word. Like you could just... his face just told the story. It was fantastic. And then he just hit him with like two key instructions. Hey, this is how we're defending the on ball. This is what we're running. Like, let's go. And it's just really, you can just show what you're capable of when you've put in the work with your group, when you understand the relationship with people, when you understand body language, when you understand all these nuances of coaching, what you can actually do in that short period of time.
Well, isn't it funny though, because we talk about a lot, if you are somebody that sort of yells at your players all the time, you constant, like it's constant yell, it's constant fear, it's constant this, it's constant that, that sometimes they can tune out to it. That is, because if you watch Gorge coach, he's loud, he's animated, into it, yeah, he's yeah. animated, he's all of that. So that is such a genius way, I guess, of a flipping that narrative, sort of, I'm going to sit here and I'm going to be quiet now. And it's almost like, oh, Jesus, what's coming? You know, like,
yeah.
And so you're still able to find that button to push by, again, that's why, like, sort of, for lack of a better term, it's language, it's communication, it's the way, you know, he's approached that time out. And at the end of the day, you know, you can have all these things in place. If you don't know your athletes, no matter what you say, it doesn't matter what you say, how you say it, they're not going to take it from you. So sometimes I think from our younger age groups, sometimes I think we need to go in to timeouts and ask more questions and see what they're, you know, I know I ask a lot of questions when I was coaching NBL1. Hey, how are they guarding us? And I'll say, oh, they're switching. Okay, so what do we run? Mm. And they say this. And you want to say, so you know it. but it's just sort of reaffirming that that learning. So then if that happens again, if that change up happens again, I don't have to blow a time out. They go, oh, that's what we go to.
Yeah.
You know, it sort of brings them back to that sort of discovery, I guess. So, yeah, timeouts are an absolute minefield at times. Like I think sometimes we sort of skirt over what they are and how we can use them and how beneficial they can be for us.
It's such a shame, though, that we don't get into those timeouts anymore.
It is
like
a shame.
You think about timeouts so over the years have been brilliant.
Especially in the last 2 minutes.
Yep.
That's the stuff you really want to hear, in a close game. Like, imagine being in those timeouts for the most recent Perth Wildcats, Melbourne United game that went into OT. Yep. And, you know, it's it's a shame.
And you think about, like, Gorge is a great one, obviously, like the Men's World Cup. Like, we're carrying dead bodies out there. Like, that thing went viral.
Yeah.
Like, everyone is about it. Like, all the Americans, like, who is this guy? Like, this is fantastic. Like, listen to how much he's, like, holding NBA people accountable.
Yeah, that's what someone said. NBA guys wouldn't be able to handle this. And then somebody else came in and said,
four of them. So right in front of
them. They're NBA guys.
They are hearing this just as much. Like, you think about the Connor Henry timeout a couple of years ago. Like, you take a dribble, paraphrasing. You take a dribble. Like, those types of things. Some phenomenal coach moments over the years. Like, and I think back, like, Trevor Gleeson was really big on not talking in those timeouts when they used to be mic'd up because he was conscious of people listening in down the other end, relaying what was coming back. So he'd just sit there with the whiteboard on his lap and it's like,
but that's also diagram. That's also like proof.
It was a double stagger for Cotton. Like, mostly coming out of timeouts. Like, genius coaching, frankly. Like, that's where I'd be going too.
But that's proof, though, that they'd done the work during the week. So you know, I think sometimes as coaches we maybe overestimate a little bit our influence on a game mid-game, all that work has been done, or not just during the week, but, you know, in the lead-up and pre-season and things like that. And, you know, I know a lot of the coaches that are listening, like, yeah, that's NBL, they've got the time. That's where the theory of keeping things simple comes into play because you don't have the time, you don't have the resources, you don't have the access.
Something for later, actually, but we'll get to that in a little bit.
But, yeah, that theory of keeping it simple, so then the language you use in your timeouts doesn't have to be as complicated, easier absorbed, easier implemented, you know, so it's consistent throughout, you know, both practice and game.
Yeah, just building on that and circling back to what you were talking about earlier about talking in questions. And I know that I love using that technique in those timeouts when you're up. You know, you have those timeouts when the opposition's called it and you're just humming. Like, everything is cooking right now.
Not as often as I'd like it. but yeah, continue. That's okay.
For me, it's like, okay, well, I don't really need to, you know, upset the apple cart here, right? You know, the guys are obviously in a good headspace. They're executing what we've asked. I don't need to go in and add too much more information. So this is a great time just to ask some questions to reaffirm what we're doing well. Hey, what are we doing well right now? Why are we doing that? Or, hey, who's been good for us? You know, maybe somebody, you know, had a great box out or something that we can, again, identify. So I think that's a really good one, especially for our VJ coaches out there. When there's those ones, you're like, oh, I'm not quite too sure what to say right now, especially if you're up. Get in there and ask some questions and reaffirm the learning through positivity.
Coops has just gone full country.
He has.
Referring to the VJBL as VJ.
Yeah.
swear, any country coach you talk to is like, hey, how's your team going? Which one, my VJ team? Like,
is this the moment? Is this the official moment where I hand in my Metro card and this it's full country now?
Yeah, full country now. Warren Brown did just place a VJBL sign at the front of the door, so I feel like he's subliminally tapping
into
it. Well,
and from my angle, I can only really see the V and the J. So.
Yeah, okay, very good.
But I think one of the things that's I watched a young coach, she's in our pathway. I'll name her and then we can decide whether to edit it out or not. Maddie Lee. Oh,
like all more work for you now, stuff. Rob. Yeah, thanks, mate.
39 minutes. I watched her coach in just some practice games that were on over the a couple of weekends ago, just a little tournament that was put together by a few clubs, which I thought was great. But her team jumped out to like a 25-point lead at halftime. Against a really good team and a really well-coached team. And, you know, so it's one of those things, you go, this isn't going to last forever. There's going to be a run at some point. And the run came and you're watching the lead sort of just drop and drop and drop. And she just held her nerve and didn't blow the time out and didn't, you know, intervene or anything like that. When I spoke to her after the game, she said, well, it's a practice game, so who cares, for one. And then
like it.
And then she goes, and I wanted to see if they could figure it out. I wanted to put them in the position to be able to, you know, can they handle the pressure of the lead dropping? And, you know, can we still execute in those situations? Can we still defend the way, when things start to tighten up? And as she said, the answer is no. They still won, but they only won by like 3 points or something like that. But it gave her a lot of information to go by. It gave really good experience for the athletes if they come into this situation to have to figure it out. But it was really good for her too, because then she had to be sort of smart with how she subbed her messaging from the site. How do I get messages onto the floor without a timeout? So it was really good practice for if you're out of timeouts or you're trying to save a timeout for a situation or whatever it might be, really good practice for her in a game that doesn't matter to try and still get those messages through and communicate that. And I thought that was just brilliant, like really like great management, great approach. And
I think maturity too.
Yeah.
Like to look at the long-term view. I mean, practice games are practice games. So the long-term view of, hey, this is not important now. Let's see if we can find out a little bit, because she's new to that team. She hasn't had them before or anything like that. So she's trying to work out who's who in the zoo, so to speak, and work out what happens. A couple of things I'm curious on your thoughts on. Coaches that take their timeouts down the end of their team, so not sitting directly in front of their team, but sitting down the very end where all five are still sitting there. Have you seen that a little bit? Because I've seen Kristen Veal do it with Canberra Caps.
Yep.
Have you done it before? Have you tried it before? Do you know why?
I've never done it.
Yep.
I don't know. There will be a reason. Yeah, I just don't know what it is. Mm. Yeah. So, because I've never done it before. So.
Yep.
Yeah, no, I've never positioned myself differently from directly in front unless there's a geographical reason as to why I can't. I mean, just thinking on it, and I know I've had this in the past with some teams where maybe there's a really strong leader. So obviously I've had the pleasure of, growing up with David Barlow, like he's a good mate, and got to coach him as well, which is really cool, that we played together and then got to coach him. And he's a basketball genius. He's a really good communicator. And so I knew sometimes that he was going to talk, he needed to talk, and that I would position myself maybe a little bit more off to the side and give him that central position. And so he could get his message. Yeah, he potentially was already started talking as I'm coming into the huddle after speaking with the assistant coaches. And, more often than not, he's addressing the things that I was going to address anyway. So I can give him that platform. I can kind of be there on the side. I can get a couple of my diagrams done ahead of time and then be like, great, everybody got what Dave said, basically, just reaffirm it. And then here's what we're doing offensively. Here's what we're doing. Let's go. So that's a positioning thing for me.
Here's one, and it probably never happened, but if it did, how would you respond if he was to say something you don't agree with?
Yeah, if he was already in it during the timeout, I would still give him time to do it. If he was on the floor, I would bear with it. Like I would, he's earned the collateral to be able to do that, where I could kind of give him some rein. If he wasn't on the floor, I would immediately go to him and ask some questions. Why did you think this is the change we need to make? Or what are you seeing that maybe I'm not? And then if it just got to the point where it was like, well, no, we're not seeing eye to eye, I would then at the next best time, like let's say if we're on the court and I can't call a timeout, I would get the point guard and say, no, we're going back to this, or we're gonna change to that. And it's funny that you ask, because it comes off the back when I was at my first ADC, is when Andre Lemanis was still kind of connected with the Green and Gold pathway. And so he was running it with Capes, up in Canberra. And he was fantastic. Like to be around him and in that environment was obviously wonderful. And then he made himself readily available just to go up and ask questions. And right at the end of the camp, I just pulled him aside and said, hey, thank you so much, and asked him about, you know, how does he go with exactly that same scenario in that you've got these brilliant players, like guys that are, you know, really high IQ, they're coming from really high levels, they bleed green and gold, they're pretty vocal, especially in your timeout. How do you go managing their ability to speak, their kind of ego, and you being the head coach? Like, you know, where do you get with that? And he was fantastic. He's just like, you know, I give these guys the license, you know, like I back them, I trust them to do it. But at the end of the day, I'm the head coach and it's my voice. And so it doesn't matter who's in my team. If I need to get something in there, then I'm going to do it. I'm going to trust myself to do it. And it was just really interesting hearing him talk like that. And that gave me that kind of same confidence to go away and be a similar coach, because that's another guy I've looked up to and I think's, you know, been fantastic. So it was good advice.
That makes sense. Cheers for the head coach.
can I?
The nervous laughs would suggest that both of you want chairs during this time out.
I used to be so opposed to chairs until I, you know, started pushing 40 and. Now I need, you know,
and it's stability.
The ground area of the Titanic to get up off the floor. So I do coach with a chair now, but I get it myself.
Yep. Coops, what about you?
It was the same. Hated chairs. Thought they were so pretentious. And then my knees started going, and I was like, oh God, I'm going to need a chair. And then I used the chair for the first time and lost most of my games in that tournament. And so, of course, reptilian brain, superstitious. Obviously, I'm losing because of the chair, 100%. So I didn't use the chair. And then most recently, I was like, oh, yeah, like I'm going to need a chair. Like, and couldn't fit a chair between the advertisement and the bench, so I was back on the knee. So hopefully in Ballarat for 20s, I'll be able to get back to my chair, but please don't judge me for sitting on it.
You just see Coop just doing like bulk squats, reverse lunges in preparation for his tournament coming up. What do you want your assistant coaches doing during the timeout? Because you see it a fair bit. Some are like super invested. They got their nose in the timeout. They see what's going on. Others, you can almost see just like wandering around at the back, not engaged with what's going on. What would you prefer, Zoe? Like, is there a preference even?
Yeah, I want them engaged. The only time I don't want them engaged with my timeout is if there's an injury and we don't have medical. So they're there to help care for the athlete and also be able to then give me a bit of an update after the timeout. But otherwise, they need to be as locked in on what we're doing as possible. I don't want them talking, not even to each other. And I know that sounds horrible, but it's the message that it sends, that it's okay. Even if you're having basketball conversations, even if you're talking about different things, that it's okay to be talking whilst the head coach is talking and not engaged. And like I mentioned before, you could have an athlete try and clarify something that's been said. If you haven't been listening, you're not going to be able to do that. So, yeah, the only other time I would say is if a referee approaches your timeout and is, you know, either trying to get you onto the court too early or has something to say or whatever. I'm happy for them to try and run a little bit of interference and keep us a little bit, give us that little bit of extra time. But no, for mine, particularly in the younger age groups, you need to be as dialed in as the athletes, because if we're asking them to be that, then they should have to be that too. Yep.
What about you, Coops?
Yeah, the interference piece, definitely. I mean, that's where they can be really valuable. So anytime they can put a little barrier between us is great. These are some of the best times on the pod where I'm the opposite. I actually don't mind the coaches having that moment to be on the floor together, to stand up, to be looking at the floor from a different angle. And if some ideas start flowing, they can share some different ideas that are going to benefit the team. Great. But the caveat to that is, in exactly what Zoe was just talking about, you need to know what I'm saying in the timeout. And I recently had a coach say to me that he had that issue where he's like, oh, look, we're talking, the guys are going out, maybe there's no execution, you're wheeling around to us and saying, why aren't they doing this or whatever? And then, you know, us going, oh, we actually don't know what was going on. So, yeah, like, so just as long as they know, and they can do that prior, you know, we can have a quick discussion around what's going to be said and what I'm about to run. And then as long as you're clued in on that, then go have your chat and do what you need to do. But also I'd prefer it's not on top of the timeout, you know, for again, talking about what Zoe's talking about, you know, we don't want the distraction, like walk out onto the floor, you know, go and get between the referees, maybe a little bit early and have it there. So make them walk around you or something like that. So, yeah.
Top things you would do to avoid calling a timeout. So what would you do instead of calling a timeout if you don't want to call the timeout? Like, momentum might be in your favour. You feel like the other team might call it, or you may not have timeouts left. What are some of the things that you would consider doing in that type of a situation?
Go one for one?
He'll take one, then you take one. Like, sure. The look of fear in Zoe's eyes there.
No, you know where I went back to? Remember when the old school free throw bonus days?
Yeah, one-on-one.
Yeah, one-on-one. Yeah. That's where I was like, is that what you're talking about? What are you doing?
I actually played in that era. Under
so
eight.
Did I. Yeah. So that's where I went back to. I was trying to connect it, getting a bit of an insight into how ridiculous my brain is. Anyway, yeah, sure.
All right, Coops.
Okay. My first one. I try and establish a really good rapport with the point guard, which obviously I alluded to earlier with them sitting in the middle of the timeout, but to try and get to a point with them that every stoppage, their first look is to me. So we're going to try and get as many huddles as we can. We want as much connection as we can. We want as much clarity as we can. But my preference is any stoppage, it's a quick head check to me. And then I can either, you know, maybe call something out, or if we've got long enough, maybe a free throw situation that they can run over and I can get maybe a more elaborate or sophisticated instruction to them. But that's kind of plan A, is that I've got that really good connection with a point guard who's my conduit on the floor, and I can get an instruction that can maybe, you know, be a circuit breaker to them straight away.
Yep. All right, Zoe, what do you got?
If that doesn't work, because that would be my number one, would be to then look to make a change. A personnel change. So look to sub and send the messages, whether it's one or two athletes at a time. I don't generally sub more than two at a time. Just a preference for me. I feel like sometimes that can, it's too much of a weight of a change.
Sometimes it can be what
but
you
sometimes
need,
it, yeah.
Yeah, like, and especially again, that's top.
That's one of those things that you've got to be able to, my preference is to not sub more than two, but if I need to, I will. So, you know, but make that personnel change and try and send the messages through those athletes, whether it be, you know, things we need to change, things we need to look at, whatever it might be. Maybe just change the look or the, you know, we might be, if we're getting absolutely pummeled inside, we might go big. You know, if they're shooting the lights out, you know, we might go a little bit smaller, switch everything, you know, all that sort of stuff. So give you the opportunity to have that different look, to be able to, again, try and either push your momentum further or steal it back.
Yep. Coops, you're on.
Well, it's funny, just quickly, not trying to get on too much of a tangent, but I'm actually coming around, or back around, I should say, on platoon subbing.
He loves a 5v5.
Yeah. It's going to mess with him this year at Nationals when he's got 12 players.
Well, I did it once in Doha, which was more out of frustration. But, you know, thinking about, and this goes back to my conversation with my S&C and physio in Sandringham, Rob Donata. Shout out to Rob, who's been around basketball a long time. He's fantastic. And we were talking about best practice in preseason, and, you know, he brought up that the whole situation around the AFL going to the NHL and learning about their line changes to keep, you know, to combat fatigue. And then they brought that back, and then obviously Collingwood started interchanging 1,000 times a game, and they implemented the rule change. Anyway, so anyway, that's where that comes from. So I'm really starting to experiment with some platoon subbing around, you know, how we can change the game, how we can impact fatigue. Anyway, story for another pod. I would foul.
Yep.
So not to I know I'm not going to use my language. So I should try and keep some things secret on the pod. I'm probably maybe a little bit too transparent sometimes. I know some coaches have used the word steal in the past. So obviously to, you know, the opposite of what we want to yell out. So the thing's just getting wild. You know, they're on a run. It's crazy. You know, I can't get a stoppage. I can't get to the point guard. You know, we can't make the sub. You know, it's yelling out, hey, steal, steal, steal. Like, let's get the foul. Let's at least just put the brakes on the game, get the sub or get to the point guard and hopefully make the change that way.
Yep. Zoe?
Depending on the reasoning for needing to call a sub, then I'm changing my D. You know, so making that sort of adjustment. And I could change the offensive structure as well. But defense probably is the one because, as we mentioned, you're generally wanting to fix things or break runs to call timeouts. So it's often other teams are scoring, so you need to make those stops. So I would change my defense. Again, whatever we're into to something else. Like I mentioned before, though, you know, if I know it's a third quarter, the other team's got a bit of a jump on us and I know that other coach doesn't want to call a timeout, I may call a timeout even though it's a gift for them to make that change to try and force, like I was saying before, try and push up the floor a little bit, put that pressure on, try and get maybe, you know, 4, 6, 8 quick points in a row to really put the sweat on. And again, have him or her thinking about me and us rather than them. But yeah, I'd make that adjustment. If it's because we're struggling to score, again, make a change, but it'd be a pointed change. So instead of, you know, I run a lot of, you know, conceptual type offense, we're running this particular offense or section of our offense for this player to get this shot where she wants it, and yeah, to be able to then just sort of, you know, either get to the line, because that's also another way if you are struggling to score, get to the line and just see something go through the net, although free throw shooting's not really a strength across the country at the moment. But yeah, so just to try and either get ourselves to the line or get ourselves a high percentage look and score. So it's a bit more pointed rather than a sort of taking decisions off them for a few minutes and then, yeah, looking to give that back if it goes well. But, yeah, making those sort of structural change-ups, I guess.
Yep. Coops?
I just love that language around the decision-making piece. You know what I mean? Like what sort of decisions are they having to make? You know, how are their decisions impacting the game? And how do I potentially, and I love that, just remove, you know, some of that fluff, remove some of those decisions that are obviously causing us problems. I think that's clever. Oh, I think we've got most of them. Probably throw water on the floor or just sprint down and tackle the other coach is probably where I'd get to at this point. If I haven't been able to, if we've used all these strategies, yeah. I'm now at this point, that's probably
the most step. If you've used all those strategies at this point, you're calling a timeout. Like, it is as simple as that.
I told you guys, I bank them.
Yeah.
Right? So I'm spilling water, I'm tackling the other coach before I call a timeout.
Full Bobby Knight.
That's
and
right.
Just hope there.
Yeah, chair on the court, whatever.
That makes sense. Well, that's probably all we got in the timeout realm.
Oh, I've got one more.
Oh, okay.
Ooh.
You are up 20. You have an opportunity. There's 30 seconds to go.
No, I'm not calling the timeout. This is going.
Yeah. What if you've got a final, the final the next week and it's an opportunity? I'm just throwing this out there.
Yeah, okay.
And it's an opportunity to, you know, execute something or have a look at something.
No.
What do you do?
Not calling it.
20 points?
Yeah, let's say 20.
Yeah, I'd call it.
Yep.
Yep, I think that's within the realm of...
30 seconds.
Yeah. Ooh. Yeah, I think...
What's your number?
Well, it's usually 7, but yeah. I think 20's within the realms of the ethics of and the etiquette of coaching that I'm, you know, I'm giving you the respect that you could foul and splash some threes, that this thing's, you know, maybe there's a world in which you could get it, and also that I need to coach the end of this. Yeah, but probably anything above that, I think when we're getting to the 30 point and above mark, now, yeah. Now I'm a bit like, that's, yeah.
Yeah, so I'm about 10.
10?
Yeah, I've got to feel like there's some confidence there, but also you're probably feeling pretty average down the other end. And I suppose it depends on the level you're coaching at too. Like if you're at an Oz level, no worries. Like the game is the game, so to speak. At a junior level, I'm not here for it. Like it's, for mine, let the game end. To be fair, if they're still trying to win and they're harassing and pressing, I'm probably more open to it.
Yeah.
But if they've put Q in the rack, I'm not calling a timeout to diagram something that's like, hey, you guys wait here for a minute while we prepare for something for next week that you won't be playing in.
Yeah.
Like that is probably where my line is.
That was going to be my other question. Have they scored? Is it coming off their basket?
Yes.
Yeah, see, if they've scored, again, I'm more likely to call it. Again, you know, that...
The advance or...
The advance, yeah. You know, there's a little bit about it. And again, I feel like I'm showing respect. You've just scored on us. Like, you know, you haven't put the cue in the rack. I'm not going to put the cue in the rack. I'm going to get as much out of this. But if we got a stop, you know, and then I can
And they foul.
Yeah, and they foul us or whatever. You know, a stop and then a foul. Now I'm kind of, piling on. Then I think I'd probably reconsider.
Damn ethics.
Yeah. Oh, no, it's just...
What would you do, Zoe?
As always, and I hate giving this answer, it does depend on what's happening. Yeah. Hey, don't you start, Hoops. That's going to be, it depends is going to be on your gravestone. Nathan Cooper Brown, it depends.
And you watched Below Deck.
No, I am generally against it. I think sometimes it can be quite disrespectful. I think if you... are going to call it, because we also don't get to play in this realm of situational type stuff often, especially at a junior level. So if you've got an opportunity to call a timeout, advance it and maybe try and execute something, I kind of like having that ability. But what I would always say is check in with the opposition coach first. And what I mean by that is I'll always say, hey, I just want to try and, you know, get through something. So the opposition coach gets a bit of a, oh, you're not trying to just screw me over, and it's taken a little bit better, because I know I haven't reacted great to when I've had this timeout against me.
Well, that was going to be my question. How would you react if it was flipped?
So when it's happened against me and I haven't reacted well, as soon as the ball is inbounded, we foul. I'm going to ruin what you're... what you've drawn up. I know it's petty. It is so petty.
Tom Petty.
But we're not going to win.
Richard Petty.
So I'm going to get ourselves to the bonus and I'm going to take away your opportunity. That is not the way to respond. But that's how I've responded in the past. So, you know, trying to be honest. What I would like to do though now would be just to try and change up, like, mess with it in a different way. Don't mess with it in a petty way, that way. Like
double something.
Yeah, double the inbounder, or you know, just do something nuts and try something new. But, I think if in approached in the right way, again, 20, I think you still need to check in. If it's, you know, 40 points or something like that, just let the game end. Let it finish. No timeout is that important that you need to, or instruction is that important that you need to blow that timeout.
But think what you're saying too about the reps in the clutch, like those reps of, you know, being able to draw something up and, you know, play the game that way. Yeah, you know, we listen to a lot of podcasts or read things, you know, from our friends overseas who have potentially 3, 4, 5 practices and 2, 3 games a week, or depending on, you know, what the level is. But let's say it's, you know, the college or whatever, which we get a lot through, you know, maybe our friends at Slapping Glass or the Basketball Pod. And we don't get that. You know, we get two, you know, practices a week that maybe sum up to 3 hours. And, you know, you hear all the times, oh, just take that time in practice to just grab the whiteboard and do some end of game stuff. And
what,
it's like
45 minutes on a half court. Awesome.
Yeah. By six players.
Yeah, cool. Yeah. When I don't even have any defensive transition, but sure. Yeah, let's do that. You know, so I think you do have to have a little bit of a long-term lens when, you know, when we're down here in our great nation to just get the balance and be like, hey, look, you know, I don't have the luxury of doing that at practice. So, it's 20 points or under, I'm going to sneak one. I'm going to sneak one in the game.
Yep, makes sense. All right, that wraps it up for the timeout portion of this new segment. I'd love to say that I have music. Actually, hit my music producer. I am the producer. I didn't organise any. My bad. But what I want you to imagine is you've just walked into, like, Blues Brothers style. You've walked into this church, organ playing, all that sort of stuff. A little bit of an upbeat sort of vibe. You know, a little bit...
Where's this going? You're going to have to add music because this you've captivating me.
I'm trying to explain it. Who's the most important person in a band, Coops? I know you're a music person. Who is the most important person?
Well, I used to be a drummer, so I'm going to say the drummer.
Yep. Zoe, what about you?
Well, I'm not music. I'm very musically challenged, but I would say the drummer as well. Do I need to give a reason?
No, not at all.
Okay.
I didn't expect you both to get the right answer. But well done to both of you for getting drummer is the most important person in the band.
Keeps the beat.
Damn straight.
That's it.
We were at Def Leppard last night, Zoe. So we'll reference back to this. Motley Crue were also there in attendance. They were more the warm-up act, to be fair, before any of the crew heads come for me. But that's okay. Kickstart my heart. Very good. Beastie Boys medley halfway through. Excellent. So one of the things that I noticed myself looking at it a fair bit last night, the drummer for Motley Crue, Tommy Lee. Phenomenal. Like, just drums, cymbals, like kick drum, snare, everything. Had everything going. Phenomenal, loud, kept the beat, super flashy, all that sort of stuff. Drummer for Def Leppard, Rick Allen, has one arm. Very simple, but does it very, very well. Mm. Lost his arm in a car accident when he was younger, obviously. Rob's reminder. Either way, we'll workshop the idea on the name of this.
Pick one and edit out the others.
Yeah, go with whichever one you feel like out there, coaches. There was a survey coming out for which one you prefer. Simple, done very well, is always better than flashy, done quite okay. And I think this relates into our coaching incredibly well. Like, for mine, the amount of times I've tried to overcomplicate something where it's like, hey, I don't need to overcomplicate this. Like, be simple, but be very good at your simple stuff. We've all coached against teams where it's like, all they run is pass and cut. It's like, yeah, but they're still getting 80 points.
Yeah.
Like, do simple really well out there, coaches. It is such an important part of what we do. Our players will be better for it, but we'll be better for it as coaches.
Brian Gorgian, clarity is the new clever.
Yep.
You know, that was something that really stood out from his time at the BA Coaches Conference. You know, so that's been a big soundbite kind of going through our level and our community. And I think you're spot on, Rob. And I think the more time we spend there, you know, especially in work done behind the scenes, you know, practicing your delivery. Can I use 3 words instead of 10? You know, writing notes down. How do I translate those notes to my athletes in the punchiest way possible? You know, Mike Dunlap, you know, do it in threes like we spoke about earlier. I think this is a fantastic, you know, area that coaches can invest more time in. And I think share more as well. Like, you know, if you've got some ways of being really good around creating, you know, clarity and clear and concise instructions, like, share that stuff, like, really help others out, because it's only going to elevate us as a community.
Yep, definitely. Anyway, that's my little segment at the end. It's better than Rob's rant, which was potentially going to come. It's revelation. Like, it's been workshopped and Coops has come up with it. Expect some music over the coming weeks.
You just need to pull that little sound grab. That's it. That's your song.
Done. We're in. Coops, copyright it.
Yeah.
Coaches, thank you very much for jumping in the podcast. We will catch everyone back again next week. Look, tune in and join the tribe on